email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, 51551 for your texts. We're crossing live now to the Bloom Festival in Phoenix Park, where it's been a very, very busy day for our next guest, Phoebe Foran. Hello, Phoebe.
Hello, how are you?
You're coming in loudly
Greetings
and clearly.
Greetings from Bord Bia Bloom.
So go on, describe what you can see. How is it down there?
Oh, well, look. The colours are everywhere. Everything smells beautiful. There are flowers and like nature is in full bloom here and everybody is having the best crack.
Yes, and very lucky with the weather.
But you know, we are absolutely blessed here. Like you can see the people's smiles on their faces and that's the one thing that the sun brings out. So there's nowhere else in the world you'd want to be than here in bloom, taking it all in.
You're selling it. And you're not just selling that, but you're selling skincare products because you're founder of Forager Skincare, which we'll get to in a moment.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah. But like your story is a very interesting one, and which I'd love to hear from you. It started sort of late enough in life, did it, all of this?
Well, I'm 42 now and I'm in business now 2 years. So, but I have always had a fascination with nature. It's always been in my bones and in my blood. But lately, in the past 5 years, things kind of took a shift for me. I lost my dad after a very short illness with cancer. 11 days, would you believe?
Oh, that's and, tragic, yeah.
You know, like most people who go through grief, you tend to go through a bit of a freeze moment when you don't really know whether you're coming or going. And after about 6 months of this freeze moment, I realised I needed something to ground me. And the thing that called me was the actual ground.
Right.
I started digging holes in my allotment in Bora Nebrina. I don't know what I was digging for, but I found that the most beautiful thing, which is nature.
Right. Tell us a bit about your dad.
My dad was a fantastic man. He was a carpenter, creative through and through, and majorly musical influence on me. He would have played the fiddle, the banjo, the baron, the mandolin, and just literally was a fantastic artist as well. But when we were kids, he would have read us like nature books, and he was always very, very keen on birds and plants. Mm. And one of his favourite sayings was, "The glory of the garden lies in more than meets the eye." And I think that's really true, is that what you actually put into nature, you really, really get back more than what you can just see.
Mm. And a short illness, as you say, he was diagnosed with cancer and then it deteriorated very quickly over 11 days. And I'd say there was a vigil at his bedside, was there?
We were there with him the whole time.
Yes,
yeah.
And he'd asked that if anything ever went wrong, that nobody would tell him.
Yeah, he didn't want to know. He said, if anything ever happens to me, tell me nothing. Give me very little information. So when he first went in and met his oncologist, he literally went downhill within a day or two. Mm. And so when he did have moments of lucidity, we just acted like he was just getting his checkups done, nothing was really wrong, that he was getting tests. And it just meant then when we did have these pockets of time with him, that it wasn't really upsetting for him, that he was just there and his family were there. We were playing the Eagles for him. He loved a dram of whiskey, so I used to always have a little bit of whiskey beside it. And you know the sponges that they give you in the hospital for a drop of water.
Yeah.
I was dousing that with whiskey and giving him a little sip here and there. But it just meant then that in his last days, he didn't have this fear or worry. All he knew was that his family were there with him and we're talking, telling stories and playing his music.
Surrounded by love.
Because 11 days is very, very fast.
Yeah, yeah. And did you get a chance? So you didn't really get a chance to say goodbye then?
Well, we did in the strangest way, because we knew that there was only going to be a couple of days. We were told that I had said to the oncologist, said, "Can you give us a little bit of hope?" And she said, "Would you like me to give you hope, or would you like me to tell you the truth?" Mm-hmm. And that was almost like saying there is no hope. And so we knew that the end was nigh. We just didn't know how many hours we were going to have with him. So by that stage, we just stuck by him and kept talking to him and told stories and, you know, and just had these moments with him. So we did have, we were at his bedside when he took his last breath, and we were telling him that we loved him. And this is, I suppose, like at the end of the day, when I think back, yes, it was tragic and terrible. But when I think back, what more beautiful way is there than to pass with your family around you, telling you that they love you?
We were talking to Brian Whitehouse earlier in the week about eulogies. And you did the eulogy at your dad's funeral.
Yes.
And
myself and my brother both did one. But I wrote his eulogy while he was alive, in the last day or so before he passed, because I knew that I probably wouldn't have the wherewithal to put the words down that I really wanted to say. Whereas when he was lying there and he was asleep beside, like, and I was on the chair beside him, I was able to gather my thoughts and really think about how special he was to us because he was still there. Whereas after the fact, that's when everything gets upside down. So I was able to write what I needed to say for him and how special he was to us while he was there. And I like almost proofread it to my mum while he was still alive. I was like, just so you know, this is what I want to say. And so I was just trying to capture him. It wasn't even about us. It was capturing him and what he meant to us.
And that's what Brian said. That's the I suppose the secret of a good eulogy is to capture the essence of the person. And you had your dad there and you were looking at him while you were writing. That's quite amazing,
And it was actually really special to be able to do that because, like, I could capture him in his presence.
Yeah. So 65, very, very young, and as you say, you went in, you froze a bit because you obviously were very close to him. And 11 days.
Yeah. That's as close as.
Yeah. So there was no real warning. It was just 11 days and gone.
And you know, like a year prior, someone had said to me, "Oh, my pal's after losing her dad after 3 months of cancer." And I remember getting kind of a bit weepy about it and thinking, "Jeannie Mac, if that happened to me, I would just fall down dead. I don't know how I'd cope with that." And I suppose it's one of those kind of, I learned this lesson that we have this resilience in us that you don't realise you have until you need to have it.
Yeah.
And so that would, like, I genuinely think I would never be able for it, but here I was in this situation. And a lot of people have found themselves in this situation, especially during COVID.
Yes.
And you do find a resilience.
And as you say, you grounded yourself by literally taking to the ground and digging. Did you have the allotment before your dad died?
No, I got the allotment after my dad died because I needed to dig. I needed to dig holes. Like, I'm in a suburban garden and I needed space. I say that Sigmund Freud would have a field day with it. I was digging and I don't know what I was digging
for. So you weren't digging to plant, you were just digging to dig.
Well, I had this plan that I was going to put my spuds in, you know.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, I just needed the physicality of it. That if I could dig these holes, put these seeds in into the ground or these spuds into the ground and see change and see growth happening in front of me, I just felt like this is something that I need to see because right now my world is upside down and nothing feels like it's growing or changing. Whereas if I can physically see it, hopefully I'll feel it.
Yes,
and that's what happened. So it's this whole idea of being like being grounded by the ground.
Yeah, and there's a physical element to it and like you're getting your hands dirty literally and all of that stuff they say is very good. It's very good because we sort of distance ourselves from that. You know, we become urban animals. Our ancestors would have been out there digging holes all the time. I don't know if it was part of the grieving process.
You rarely see me nowadays. Like, you know, I'm in a dress here for Bord Be a Bloom and I've got my flowers in my hair. But normally I've got muck under my nails and I've got twigs in my hair.
Yeah, okay.
but that's the thing. It's amazing what nature will do to you.
Yeah, and your relationship with nature got stronger and stronger. And it went from, helping you grieve and a bit of a hobby to being a business.
Yeah, it's been more as much as a surprise to me as to anybody else. But I kind of found that by learning from the allotment and listening to what was growing there, I was able to actually kind of really tap into it in a different way. So I was constantly pulling all these weeds out from between all the plants in my allotment. I had this vision that your garden should be pristine and you should be able to see the muck between each plant.
Yeah.
But all these weeds kept growing over and over again. And I was like, these guys are super resilient. They keep coming back. Maybe I should learn about them. And from there, I started to study to become a herbalist to really get to grips of what these plants could do. And what I found is that our wild weeds are actually one of the most sustainable resources that we have here in Ireland. And they're full of medicine. Like, if you look back at all what our grannies would have been doing, all these old wives' tales, they knew these things worked because they worked.
Yeah.
Not because of medical testing or anything.
We're not talking medicine. We're talking, you know, a bee sting or something like that, you know. So it's
Yeah. For ailments, general ailments.
Yes, yeah.
Like my BAMS will take care of things like for psoriasis, eczema, bites, stings, cold sores, even piles, right?
I'll take your word for it.
Innies and outies, I always say.
So the foraging thing now as well, because when people think foraging, they think going and getting food for free by picking leaves. So you can do that sort of thing, can you?
You absolutely can. There's so much growing around us. Like our local nettles that grow around us are like have got more iron in it than spinach.
Right.
There's all of the plants that grow around us can be, like, even by sprinkling your, like, daisies are fully edible.
Are they?
Dandelions can be sprinkled onto your salads.
No way.
Oh yeah, there's like all of these things can be eaten. Daisies to me are one of the most perfect little flowers
Do you eat daisies?
Do I eat them? Ah, yeah, give a little munch.
And what do they taste like?
Sprinkle them on your salad.
Yeah, what do they taste?
They're a bit lemony.
Right. Okay. And dandelions, yeah, which we used to call piss in the bed, so you'd eat them as well.
Listen, they're called that because they're a really powerful diuretic. So right, they help to clear you out. They make you go for a wee, like.
Yeah.
But they're fantastic. And you can sprinkle those leaves all over your salad. But the thing is with dandelion is it takes care, they take care of your liver, your pancreas and your kidneys. So by adding them into your food, you're actually supporting your body in a right, really natural way.
Okay. And you say you've BAMS as well, and you're obviously selling your wares at Bloom. You've been to Bloom before as a sort of a customer, as an observer, and this is the first time you're there as a stall holder.
I'm a trader here. But I've been coming to Bloom for as long as I can remember. It's part of my social calendar because, like, it's just so beautiful and so connected to nature. I think we're very lucky in Ireland to have a festival that celebrates nature.
Mm.
And I've always come. But now to be here as a trader, and I've been on the stage today, I'm on the stage tomorrow, on the Sustainable Living stage tomorrow and on a Monday, to be able to be here and to chat to people about all of these beautiful things and to sell my products here, it's kind of one of those bucket list things. I never thought as a visitor over the years that I would end up being someone who's selling here and on the stages.
Would your dad be surprised to see you and see what you're doing now?
I think he'd be blown away, and I think that he would be building me stands and tables and display units, and like I do get these visions of what he would have made for me, and because he would have had the whole thing decked out.
I wouldn't have
had to do any of that myself.
Right.
Whereas I've been here for the past couple of days setting up. That's it. I could move into the Auris now at this stage. I'm pretty sure they should have a bedroom there for me. I've been here so much the past few days, but I'm loving it.
And has he come around yet, our president?
He has been around, but we had a scheduling clash. We were both active at the stage. I was on stage while he was doing his thing. You know, like, we were double booked. I wonder who got the bigger draw.
Yeah. I'm sure there'll be loads of the great and the good down there, because it's on until Monday, isn't it? So it started this morning.
Till Monday.
Yeah. Yes.
This is day one.
Day one, and it's in Phoenix Park, Bloom, and the weather's brilliant. And lovely talking to you, Phoebe. I'm sure we'll chat again. Good luck with everything.
Thank you so much.
Bye now.
Listen, be good.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.